Welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast, brought to you by the South Florida chapter of the International Coaching Federation, where our goal is to engage, motivate, and inspire. In the Coach's Corner, we speak with the great professional coaches of ICF South Florida. We hear about what compels them to coach, we talk about the people they support, and the tools and techniques that they use to get the job done. Coaching is a hugely specialized craft, and this inside look at the power and the promise of coaching is both an exploration and a celebration of our member coaches, their talents, and their clients' successes. Hello, I'm Eric Gorris, a member of the ICF South Florida Programming Committee and host of the Coach's Corner podcast. Before we get into our conversation, I'd like to invite you to visit the ICF South Florida website so you can learn more about our chapter's benefits and program offerings. To learn more, visit icfsouthflorida.org and check out our calendar of events. And if you find something that interests you, register for free as our guest. Just use the promo code PODCAST. Today's guest is Katherine Hyde, PCC, a coach, consultant, and trainer who works in the important field of transgender identities. Katherine speaks with us today on her work with and in the LGBTQ+ community, as well as her path to coaching through Georgetown University and her work as an executive coach, where she encourages leaders to lead as their true, authentic selves. Please welcome to the show, Katherine Hyde. Katherine Hyde, hello. Welcome to the ICF South Florida Coaches Corner podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here in Florida. The weather is lovely.
Are you, now I have to ask, I've read here that you're in Pompano, is that right?
That's correct, Pompano Beach.
And you're new to Pompano?
Yes, relatively. We've been here just over a year. My husband and I retired down here from Maryland, and I love it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Welcome to South Florida. I think speaking for so many of us who spent time in the Northeast, being down here in Southern Florida, there's a lot to like. So I'm very happy for you. Katherine, if you could, tell me, what was your journey to coaching? How is it that you became a coach? What was your path to the profession?
Well, I wasn't expecting to become a coach, but a very good friend of mine in the company I was working for suggested that I take the Georgetown coaching certificate because it really was a journey of learning about yourself. And she thought I would enjoy it. So I went and I took the classes. And I guess I was about halfway through. And I was thinking about, because I was coming up on retirement, and I was thinking about what I wanted to do in retirement. And I'm a big, fervent, and forever ally of the LGBTQ plus community because I am the proud parent of a transgender daughter. And I thought, boy, this coaching thing is something I could do to help give back to that community in my retirement. So that's what got me started.
Thank you so much for that. And that gets us very quickly to the second question, which is what kind of coaching is it that you do and who is it that you work with?
Sure. I work with all kinds of leaders. I do executive coaching, leadership coaching, and I work with emerging leaders all the way up to C-suite leaders. I do a lot of work with nonprofits that serve or want to better serve the LGBTQ plus community. I still give a lot of my time and treasure to that community. And I also recently have been doing a lot of work helping organizations wrap their heads around trans identities, especially here in Florida. That is such a hot topic right now. And there's so much misinformation out there that I come in and I do a little keynote speech or some training to help organizations kind of gain better understanding and sensitivity and more comfort with the topic.
And you're absolutely right. There is a tremendous amount of energy, for lack of a better word, around that very topic. So I will say thank you for your work. The question I'll ask is, are you working more with organizations? It sounds to me like you're working with organizations and what their response or their helping them to figure out where they are with regard to LGBTQ plus issues versus working with LGBTQ plus individuals themselves. Am I getting that right?
I do both. Many of my clients are LGBTQ plus identified, and others are just allies and find it important that they work with another ally.
There's so much that we see in this state in particular around LGBTQ+. And I wonder, the organizations that you're working with, what are this, and not the individuals, but the organizations, what are the struggles that they are up against?
Mostly, like, for example, I am working with a school system in another state, and they're up against legislative hurdles, like are passing down here, struggling because they have trans-identified children, they have trans-identified staff, they have parents of their kids are trans-identified, and they really have to walk this fine line given some of this really difficult legislation. So I help them figure that out and work through that and talk about how they can continue to support these kids and these families to the best of their abilities.
And in that approach, do you find that, you know, a lot of times we talk about ICF core competencies and, you know, coaching versus consulting versus mentoring versus training. And when you're working with a school or an institutional client like that, are you coaching at this point, or is it consulting? And
that's consulting. When I work with these organizations and do training, that's far more consulting. But I do offer, in addition, sometimes coaching to the leadership individually, because if the leadership team is not comfortable and confident, it's hard to bring that down through the entire organization.
Yes, thank you for that. And that's exactly why I asked, because it seems like anytime there's confusion, that is a optimal time to introduce a little bit of coaching and sort of, you know, explore the issues. Well, why do we feel that way? Well, why do we assume these things? Why do we think this? Why do we think that is happening? And yet the issues of, again, the very real and factual issues of what's going on with LGBTQ plus legislation in this state, in these school systems, is very factual. So it's not something that we can sort of coach around. But I can appreciate, I don't want to put words in your mouth, the way it can be a mix of, on some very linear aspects of this, we must consult. In others, we must coach.
One of my big learnings in raising a trans child, because Eric, my husband and I got it wrong. My child was born in 1993, and when we had a very effeminate boy, we went to a psychologist who told us to discourage girl play and encourage boy play, which, as a coach, you will know, is shaming. It's you know, gender identity is not a social construct. There is social construct about it, but it's also an internal sense of who you are. So we ended up shaming my child for many, many years. It was she was 15 before I finally learned enough to really understand about trans identity. And when I did, and I was able to embrace her for who she truly is, I saw this child who had previously been self-harming, self-medicating, angry, depressed, suicidal. I saw that person blossom into a happy, healthy, productive, talented, incredibly magnificent young woman. And it really brought home to me how core our identity is to our power and to our ability to lead. If we can't stand comfortably, confidently in our identity, we are denying ourselves our power as leaders. We are limiting our reach as a leader. So I do a lot of work with leaders about coming into their authentic style of leadership and standing true to their identity and their values.
Catherine, thank you for sharing that that story. I truly appreciate that. I think that goes right back to the very first question, which is sort of what brings you to coaching, you know, and I really appreciate you sharing that. As you know, in coaching, it's so often about what is the why. And I would just thank you for that. The second thing that what you just went through triggered in me is this idea that I now have identified a third coachee, or a third client, which would be the parent or someone who has a LGBTQ plus person in their lives, a child, a loved one, a niece, a nephew. And I wonder if there's any coaching opportunities there that you do.
Absolutely. I have coached hundreds of parents. I thank you for asking that, over the years, in coming to terms with their LGBTQ children, primarily their trans children. Parents are much more accepting of gay kids these days. But yeah, there is, it's an opportunity to really dig into who you are as a parent and what you want for your children and what your role is. I often say to parents that you don't get a vote in your child's identity. The only vote you get is in how you respond to that, whether or not you're going to be part of that supportive family, which we know from research reduces the chances of risks for our LGBTQ kids. A supportive family is way up there in harm reduction, or whether you can't. And there's a lot of challenges. Some parents are members of a community that just does not want to embrace these children. And I've seen parents have to walk away from a religious community. And I've seen other parents that couldn't for whatever reason. So it can be a very, very difficult challenge. And for many parents I have seen in the end, it can be a huge blessing as well, because it's my therapist said to me, it broke my heart wide open to have a trans child.
Yeah, and I can see that. And I think I'm seeing more and more examples of exactly that. It broke my heart wide open. And I think that's very heartwarming. Earlier, you had just said that this represents an opportunity. And I think that's such a great way of looking at it. The idea that, you know, well, as with anything in life, when we're presented with something that presents challenges, challenges with my church, challenges with my community, challenges with my beliefs, there we have inherently an opportunity.
Yeah, it is. It's a real opportunity to dig in and come to understand what your values as a parent are. I think a lot of us have children before we think about that. And sometimes we don't have to think about it because everything aligns easily and it's smooth. But, you know, when you have a child who's different and doesn't align with your expectations, it's an opportunity for you to sit down and do some real deep dive thinking about who you are and who you want to be as a parent.
I truly appreciate that, Catherine. And again, I'm glad to hear that you've worked with hundreds of parents who have gone through this, because I'm glad that there's hundreds of parents out there who are dealing with this and going through this. And are, you know, when you enter into coaching, you are inherently open to working through it, right? So I'm glad that there are hundreds that are working with you, and presumably hundreds who are working with hundreds of other coaches. One question I have is, you know, it can be said now that the sort of the kids of today, the youth of today, they're more expressive, or they're more open to questioning or exploring, or I don't know, feeling, I guess. And it's maybe felt that it's the adults, perhaps the lawmakers, who are having problems with this or taking issue with it. The problems that we see at sort of the adult level, where it's maybe, you know, this religious belief is against this liberal belief, which is against this school district belief. At the kid level, at the teenager level, is there an overall acceptance, or is it just as sort of, you know, this group versus that group and sort of, I don't know.
You're hitting on something that's really important, Eric. There are huge different generational differences in how we identify and how accepting we are. So I think baby boomers, I think it's something like 1 or 2% identify as members of the LGBTQ community. You get down into Gen Z, and that's up to like 7 or 8%. It's, you know, and it's not because, I tell people, it's not the soy milk that's doing this, right? It is because we have offered these kids more options to find where they feel they fit best. And they're taking them. And the kids are so accepting. We have done a great job of raising a generation of people who want to make other people feel good and accepted and happy, as opposed to, you know, we're kind of banishing the schoolroom bully, or we are trying to. And these kids are really embracing. I mean, that whole phrase that you do you, boo, right? That's all about whoever you are is great. And we want you to bring that whole person to school. And the kids are just so much more welcoming and understanding. And the other thing to keep in mind when we talk about gender, we do our gender work very young. It's like age 3 where we're figuring out what kind of girl or what kind of boy we want to be. So the idea of banning conversations around gender from schools is ridiculous. We talk about gender all the time. So it's just fear-mongering. And I think we're at a place today with the trans population that we were 10 years ago with the gay population. When we were talking about gay teachers were going to groom gay children. And, you know, I like to tell people, if influence worked, we would have no LGBTQ children because for years, there was no representation. And these kids were still born, and they still grew up, and they still identified as LGBTQ, and they had nowhere to see themselves. If influence worked, they wouldn't exist, right? They had straight parents. There were straight people on television. There were straight people on the radio. That was all there were straight people out there for them to look at. So we have to kind of back down from this idea of grooming. You can't make someone gay or trans. It's kind of baked in the cake. And then how we respond as a society is, again, that opportunity that some states aren't taking advantage of right now very well. They're resisting and fighting.
But I do find it encouraging. Thank you for that. And I would just yes and on that and say, and yes, I think options breed opportunities, you know? So I think that's fantastic. And the reason I ask about the younger generation, the Generation Z and younger than that, even in some cases, is I find that to be optimistic. That population ages up and becomes, you know, the ages we are, those attitudes, that openness, that acceptance will become more prevalent. That's my hope anyway, personally.
Mine too. I'm right there with you.
Hey, one thing I want to jump back to from minutes ago is back to the leadership work that you do. And you said something that was so clever. We talk to executive coaches here all the time. Whenever we're talking about executive coaching, we're always talking about leadership issues. But leadership in your own authentic style, I thought was so interesting. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes, I'd love to. I find that a lot of leaders read leadership books and want to adopt certain ways of doing leadership. And I encourage leaders to kind of, I don't want to stop, don't stop reading all the great books. There's wonderful work out there. But to maybe put that aside a little bit and focus more internally on what are their deepest values. So when they're faced with a challenge, that's the roadmap. Your values are the roadmap of how you will work your way through. And that comes from internal work. It doesn't come from books. It comes from understanding who you are and what you deeply care about and why you are doing what you are doing. Why did you choose to be a leader in this role, in this organization, of this team at this time? And focus on that, because leadership, as we know as coaches, leadership is being. It is who you are that enables you to really lead a team to higher heights. And when you can have a strong understanding and clarity around who you are and what your values are, what your leadership values are, and what you are bringing to the team, I think it exponentially expands our influence and our effectiveness as a leader. And it's a lot more fun and it's a lot more comfortable because you're not trying to figure out what's the right thing to do. You're just being. And that feels good for us when we can come in contact with exactly who we are and why we're here and work from that place. It's wonderful. It's a great feeling. It's like a superpower.
It's actually, yeah, exactly that. And I, you know, again, coming from that place of yourself as opposed to trying to do it how we think we should be doing it or how we've read it in the books. I'm curious, how does that work? I mean, how does it work in practical application?
Yeah, that's a great question because it's really different for everybody. And first of all, it requires a coachee who's willing to do it, right? It is courageous work to really dig into who you are. And, you know, when I coach, one of the things I care most about is creating a safe space, because we can't do this kind of courageous work if there's not a real safe space between the coach and the coachee. And it's different. I mean, in some cases, it's a values exercise. In other cases, it's a conversation about what brought you here. You know, how did you get here? What were the decisions? Where, you know, what has influenced your leadership so far? It's just a deep conversation about really, why are you here?
Leaders who are looking for leading as their authentic self, what is the obstacle that they're facing? What prevents them from doing that almost automatically?
Oh, good heavens. growing up in a world full of expectations prevents all of us from doing that automatically. You know, I like to say the work of our adulthood is getting into all those noises in our head and editing out the ones we don't want, that don't work, that don't fit. The work of childhood is collecting them, right? We collect them from school, teachers, media, all of that. We get all these noises in our head. And as an adult, we have to sit down and say, okay, this is what I got. What serves me? What do I want? What don't I want? And so I think the process of growing up is what gets in the way of finding our authentic selves and all the influences that we're battling.
Yes, 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 absolutely. Fair enough. Thank you for that. I mean, as it has come up in my work, you know, right about the time you're getting, you know, trundled off to kindergarten, that's about the last time you have your own sort of free thoughts. You know what I mean? And from there on out, it's someone, you know, push you one way or the other, tucking in that shirt tail or stand up straight young man or whatever. And it never really seemed to sort of cease to be that way until at some point an individual chooses to start working against that and unpacking that. So, yes.
I often think it's, you know, when you hear people say, I was just raised that way, I stop and I think, you know, we were all raised some way. And it really is our responsibility as an adult to figure out which pieces of that we want to keep and which pieces we want to actively shed or let go of.
Is it ever a problem for an executive when they, you know, go, when they say, okay, this is something I'm doing. I'm now going to be an executive who leads in his own authentic style. And this is different. This is different than how I've been leading here at this company for the past 5 years. It's different than the way I've been reporting to the board of directors. Does that become a challenge in situations like this?
Yes, it can be. It can even lead to deciding you're not in the right place. When you get in touch with your authentic self and how you want to lead, you may find you're in an organization that has very different expectations of its leaders and that it's no longer a fit. It can also be freeing. I've seen executives who felt overwhelmed and unable to do their job, but when they were able to step back from all that doing and think about, really, what do I care about? Really, what is the part of me that is best leveraged in this position at this time? It's freeing.
I can absolutely see that. And I can imagine that there's, now that I have new awareness of my values, or now that I have new awareness of my superpower, guess what? I've just realized I'm not on the right path. Or there's a different application for my talents that I had not seen before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen it go both ways. And I, whichever way it goes, it's a beautiful thing to witness.
I couldn't agree with you more. And there's, you know, it's funny how many clients that I'm working with, and I don't know about you, I also do executives, who where the dilemma is, should I stay at this company or should I go? You know, and it's like, great, let's explore it. It'll be interesting to see where it winds up, you know?
It's a great exploration. And it's important that we ask ourselves that question regularly, because climates change, we grow, our needs grow, our gifts grow as we grow. So checking as to the pulse of whether or not I'm in the right place with the right people doing the right thing, I think is important many times throughout our life.
And values also. I think values, in addition, they do change over time depending on what we're going through and what we're up against and what the times are. I mean, to cite a very, you know, I think there's values that at a very core level that may stay the same over the course of our lives, let's just say. But, you know, as situations change, values change. Different things became very high priority. Our values changed very big when COVID came, didn't it? When all of a sudden we're faced with a pandemic, well, all of a sudden priorities change. What is valuable and important to us, that changes. I do believe in the value, in the importance of values and doing that work with clients and discovering that. There's no question there, but I guess it's just a nice appreciation for the importance of that, doing value work and coaching.
No, I agree with you completely. And trauma changes our values, right? The birth of a child very often will make us revisit our values. The death of a child would do the same thing. The loss of a parent, the loss of a job sometimes has us relook at what we really care about. The pandemic very much did that for many people. So yeah, it's, you know, they say in biology, the definition of life is change. And I think that's true for humans too. We have to be constantly responsive to the change and where we sit with it.
Yeah, and I can see how the opposite of that is also true, where if we're not changing, that is, I mean, if not equal to death, then certainly that's not movement in the highest thought of the word. Georgetown. Can you tell me about the program at Georgetown? I mean, I ask because so many of the listeners, you know, they're in coaching, there's always this energy to get to get more skills and to educate more. And there's so many different schools out there. And Georgetown is one that I've been interested in for years. I've known a few people who have gone through it. What did you think of the program? What can you tell us? What would you like to share?
Well, I thought it was fabulous. I was one of the last cohorts to be able to go through completely in person, which I found so valuable, and I'm so grateful for that opportunity. Georgetown really works to create a community within each cohort. And then they intentionally structure the design of the learning to be experiential. As you know, as well as the reading and the understanding of concepts, there's a great deal of experiential learning. Because you have a learning circle advisor, you go through the practice coaching and you get your recordings done. So when you come out of Georgetown, you are ready to certify with ICF, which is wonderful. They kind of hold your hand through that entire complex process. They're very, I don't know how to say this. It's like they really are so individual focused that I felt like every member of my cohort had this incredible personal deep learning that happened as we went through this program as well. The only thing I would ask of Georgetown is what I would ask of the entire community, and that is to get better at bringing more diverse voices to the table.
It's funny because that is something that I have heard with regard to a number of the sort of brand name institution, university level programs where there is a lack of diversity in both the faculty or the instructors and the students. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, it's something we as a coach, the whole coaching community needs to get better at it. And we're not the only community. There's lots of institutions and communities across the world that need to get better at this.
And I would assume that Georgetown, to the extent that they're aware of it, are approaching a solution there, whatever that solution may be.
Absolutely. They are working on it. But with anything, institutions, and you find this when we coach leaders and companies, the culture is embedded. It's like, what is that wonderful quote that culture eats strategy for breakfast, right? It is so difficult to change a culture. And that's what this work requires.
Catherine, this is something that I didn't have a chance to discuss in the sort of the pre-interview, but I'm so curious. How is it that you work? Do you work in private practice, or do you work with a group of coaches? Do you work as an internal coach? How is it?
I have my own business. It's called Navigating What's Next. And I also work as a consultant with groups of coaches, and in organizations of coaches, but I'm primarily just a private practitioner. I have my own LLC, and I work for lots of different people, but I am not internal.
Got it. Okay, cool. Again, it just always so interesting. We as coaches, in addition to all the things that we sort of have to, I find it so funny that coaches, all the things we have to deal with, in addition to marketing ourselves and packaging ourselves and pricing ourselves, we also have to run our own businesses and our own LLCs and run our own private practices. An interesting choice of professions. You know, on one hand, we think, oh, it's just so freeing. And then on the other hand, it's like, my goodness, there's a lot of back office work that goes into this profession. So what aspirations do you have for your practice? Do you see it becoming a large practice?
No, actually, I don't. I work 2.5 days a week. I like that. I would like to do more and more work in support of the trans community. But I also love my private clients just so much. I learn so much, and it is such a privilege to be in space with someone when they have their aha moments that I don't know when I'll stop.
Would you care to share an example of a great aha moment?
So one of my clients was promoted from a manager of a small portion of the department to head of the department. So she was going from like team lead to more like division. And she was having such angst around imposter syndrome and, am I going to be able to do this? And what will the team think of me? I used to be a peer, now I'm the boss, and all of this. And we did an assessment with her. I think it was the leadership circle profile or the drive, or maybe it was both. And she came to understand as she went through this that her old job was exhausting. And she was thinking that she wasn't any good at this new job because it felt too easy. And when she found out that really the old job was not the right fit, this new job as people lead fed everything to who she was. She's a people leader. That's her authentic self. And when she understood that through the assessments and through conversation and through being really honest with herself and giving up this idea of I am what I do, right? That letting go of that identity, which so many of us have, especially the great students, right? They all come out with, how many papers do I write? When she was able to let go of that and really embrace herself and understand that now when she goes home from work, she's energized and excited and her team is doing magnificently. So that's a really glorious moment.
Fantastic to see that transition to authentic self and how with that client, it opened that person up to what? To the ease and flow, right? Like, and yes, that notion that it can't possibly be this easy. Well, it can be if you're, you know, moving in those authentic ways, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't mean there aren't hard days. But, you know, she had this story she was telling herself of she wasn't doing enough. She was just in meetings. She wasn't doing enough. And when she realized that her job now was more about connecting people and opportunities and creating the environment for her team to flourish and managing all that craziness from above, that, and she does this all so well. When she was able to let go of that, I am what I do, and my value is in who I am and what I'm being, it was just incredible for her.
You know, just a few minutes ago, you brought up those what I consider to be two of the most insidious words in the entire lexicon of coaching, which is imposter syndrome, because it's something that just seemingly is everywhere and is seemingly confounding and seemingly just undermines all of us who are faced with it to the core. And I'm wondering, is being a leader as your authentic self, does that become an antidote to in some regard to imposter syndrome?
It certainly did for this client. And I think that's a wonderful thought, Eric, that could really use exploring, because I think there's a lot of potential in that. And I had never thought of that before. So I thank you for offering me an epiphany.
Going back to something you said a few minutes ago, you said you would like to do more for to support the trans community. I would just ask the question, how? How would you like to do that, Catherine?
Well, I would love to do more work with organizations learning how to grapple with this. There's a business case to be made for this as well. When we look at the Gen Z and under, they and millennials, they are making up more and more of the workforce. I think in a couple of years, it'll be like 64% of the American workforce. These workers care very much about diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice. And our organizations are not doing enough to meet the demands that these young people are bringing. So I would love to work with more organizations around that to gain better understanding and comfort. A lot of our leaders are still in that generation that doesn't know a lot of LGBTQ people or doesn't understand these things. So I would love to do more work making those organizations better able to support these young folks and what they need.
Thank you so much for that. Catherine, before we go into before we get into the closing round here, the last few minutes, please, for the listeners who feel compelled, how can they connect with you or connect with your business?
Absolutely. My website is nwncoaching.com. My email is C as in Catherine, V as in Victor, Hyde, H-Y-D-E @gmail.com. I'm on LinkedIn, C.V. Hyde or Catherine V. Hyde on LinkedIn. And I would absolutely love to hear from some of these listeners.
Thank you so much for that. Listeners, you heard Catherine's waiting. All right, Catherine, thank you so much for being here. This has just been a tremendous conversation. And I commend you for the hugely important work that you're doing. So thank you so much for being there. I especially appreciate anytime I talk to a coach who is not only coaching sort of the baby boomer generation or the executives in the C-suite, but is also going skewing younger and working with the sort of future generations, the future C-suite, the future executives. That's where I believe that we can really see some exponential and compounding results. Again, the idea that the younger we are coaching our clients, the more impactful and the sooner we get to them, the better they're going to be. So I commend you for that as well. So thank you. And thank you for being here. Last question. Catherine, what do you see for the future of coaching?
I think coaching has a fantastic future. There is more and more demand. Again, these young people, the more of my young clients, they have a great growth mindset. They came into work already knowing they were going to be lifelong learners. I remember there was a time we had to like teach the C-suite that you don't know everything. Lifelong learning was such a thing 20 years ago. These kids know that. And they want coaching and they want to get better. And it's just so exciting to see the demand continually increase for coaching and the willingness to embrace it with courage and dedication. I'm very, very excited for the future of coaching.
And thank you so much for that, as am I. And Catherine, I can't say it. I can't say it enough. Thank you so much for being here today. It has been absolutely our pleasure talking with you.
Well, Eric, I thank you for having me. I appreciate your questions and I appreciate what you do. This is a great service you're offering the community and we're grateful for it. Thank you.
What a great conversation. It's always so educational and inspirational to talk with colleagues and learn from their experiences. That's why it's so important to continue to collaborate with others. And that is one of the best reasons to consider working with a certified coach. Working with a certified coach opens a whole new space to learn, grow, and design your future in a way that you want it. To learn more about what coaching is and how it can help you, please visit our website at icfsouthflorida.org. There you'll find educational resources, our events calendar, and our coaches directory. We hope you'll find exactly what you're looking for, and if you like what you see, consider becoming a member. We would love to welcome you to our community. That's it for now. Thanks again for joining us in the ICF South Florida's Coach's Corner. Until next week, I'm Eric Gorris. Take care and be well.